Okay, so last night I actually began it, and I was explaining a little bit at the Watford Sangha about how Bhaktivinoda Thakur predicted the appearance of Srila Prabhupada. Not by name, not directly, but he said that very shortly a great personality would appear who would take the movement of Lord Chaitanya all over the world and bring people from all over the world back to Mayapur, to the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. And Prabhupada himself said that it was not a coincidence that he took birth in the same year that Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent out the English book, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts, to all the universities around the world. So there was a transcendental plan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, was extremely important in the Vaishnav movement, because when he appeared, the Vaishnav religion was considered to be extremely low grade, debauched, and an excuse for sense gratifiers to do all kinds of nonsense things in the name of some kind of religious practice. So he took up the task single-handedly of reverting everything back to the original standard of purity that was found there in Lord Chaitanya's time. And he was very, of course, very active in that. And he had one son, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Bimal Prasad, who he trained specifically also to carry on that work. And then, of course, he had a spiritual son, Srila Prabhupada, who continued that work all over the world. So there's that transcendental link. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is particularly prominent in our line because of his activities in separating real religion or real Vaishnavism from the false Vaishnavism. And he was not only preaching the proper standard, but he took it upon himself to point out the faults and defects specifically of different groups that were practicing or appeared to be Vaishnavas at that time, the Apasampradayas, which was a little unusual step to take in, I guess, Hindu India. It's not done to criticize others. Yeah, everybody says nice, you should only, the mood is that you should only say nice things and you shouldn't criticize anybody else. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada were not in that mold. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he began it by actually writing down and distributing literature which pointed out the faulty fake Vaishnav movements, Owls, Bowls, Saki Bakers, Sahajis, etc., etc. He was very open about his criticism of them. And that was a little unusual. Of course, he was a magistrate by profession, and his business as a magistrate was to point out or to actually make a distinction between what was right and what was wrong, and actually, you know, he had to pass judgment on people. So sometimes people have this sentimental idea that you should not pass judgment on anybody, and that's all right, so long as you don't know the standard properly, clearly, then don't say anything to criticize others. That example is there that, you know, all the waves in the Ganges are all equal because they're all Ganges. But at the same time, actually for the purpose of restoring Vaishnavism, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to criticize. He had to go public and he had to show people and tell people why these various groups were off and then present them, you know, with the proper standard. So that was his business, both as a magistrate and as a spiritual preacher, that he had to make a judgment between what was right and what was wrong. Srila Prabhupada told us one time when we were on a morning walk in Mayapur in 1976 about how his father, he would always... it's not going through. His father would always invite so many sadhus, at least four or five every day, to his home, and they would take meals with them. And he said sometimes his father was even buying marijuana that he would give to one local sadhu, and the sadhu would smoke it. So, Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada, why was he doing that? So, you know, because we have our rules and regulations. So Prabhupada said, no, he said, we learned that distinction from our spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But otherwise, in general society, anybody that looked like a sadhu, then all right, they give them that respect. And in those days, it was not considered to be particularly bad, you know, to smoke marijuana. So many sadhu, so-called sadhus were doing that. He said, of course, that is low class. That is on the lowest class. But his father, he said, was not making that distinction. All right, he's a sadhu. Give him what he wants, whatever he requests. So this gentleman was requesting some marijuana. He would go and buy it for him and give it to him. Because it wasn't illegal in those days either. But anyway, the point is that by the time that Srila Prabhupada had come into his early manhood, he had become quite disgusted with the standard of the so-called sadhus. So much so that when his friend, I think it was Lokanath Mullick, invited him, that there's actually this sadhu that's speaking here in Calcutta. This was in 1922. He's speaking, and he's a very knowledgeable, very learned person. We should go and see him, because Prabhupada was kind of like the leader of his group of friends, and whatever his opinion was, they would take that very seriously. So they had been to see Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and they were impressed with him, but they wanted to get Abhay's endorsement. They wanted to get his opinion. But he didn't want to go. And he said, I didn't want to go because I had so much experience of these bogus sadhus, fake sadhus, you know, coming and going through my father's house, that I actually had a very low opinion of them. But then they insisted and they dragged him along. And then, of course, he said that he was very happy after that first meeting with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur at that Altadinga Junction Road house on the roof there. Then he said, I was very impressed. He said, and at that time I accepted Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in my heart as my guru. And he said, I formalized that again in 1933 by taking initiation. So, you know, it was a time of change during the appearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. His activities were very pivotal in restoring Vaishnavism up to its proper standard. In 1887, he was able to identify the real birth site of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what we call the Yog Pit now in Mayapur. Previously, there were claims that it was in Navadvip, modern-day Navadvip, but by careful inspection of historical records, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was able to established that city was not more than 100 years old. So it could not have been the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared. And then by, you know, inquiry and painstaking investigation, finally they came to this place where there were all these tulsi plants growing, and where the local Muslims, who were the main landholders in that area, would not go. They always said that there was something strange about the place, unusual things would happen, and they didn't like to go there. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he heard about that place. When he went there, he became convinced this is the place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth. And just to get a confirmation, he then took Srila Jagannath Das Babaji there. At that time, he was about 120 years old. He was considered the foremost Vaishnav in that area. And they had to carry him there in a basket because he was so, you know, his body was so old and crippled. We've seen that picture of him hunched over. So he couldn't really walk even. But when he was brought to the site, as soon as he saw it, he leapt out of the basket and began dancing in ecstasy, jumping up and down. So that was a confirmation. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur then was very instrumental in giving us what we call the Krishna Consciousness Movement in the form of ISKCON nowadays. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of course, played a major role in formalizing the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and organizing the preaching. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was also preaching extensively. He was traveling from village to village, and sometimes as many as 10,000 people would come to hear him talk. So it wasn't a small thing, it was a very big thing. The whole of Bengal was being educated or re-educated by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he then, you know, being trained by his father, he took up the mission of preaching, and he, of course, formalized everything in the form of the Gaudiya Mat. He started giving initiation to people, non-Brahmins, and putting them in saffron, and sending them out, making them sannyasis, and very rigidly establishing the proper principles of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And then, of course, Prabhupada learnt from that, and he continued the same thing. So we were in Mayapur for about 2 months at the beginning of 1976. Prabhupada got there on March the 17th and stayed through till the 21st of March. Sorry, he got there on January the 17th. He stayed through till the 21st of March, so it was about 2 months. And whilst we were there, then there was some discussion about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's younger brother, who was the only surviving member of the family at that time, Lalit Prasad. So he had a place in Bianaga. So that, of course, is the birthplace, Ulagram, Bianaga, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur made his appearance and spent his early childhood. So there was some temple there, there still is, and there's some museum, kind of. And at this time, there was some talk about the possibility of ISKCON doing something in Bianaga, either taking over the temple there or leasing some land and having our own temple, something. There was some discussion going on. So this was on the 21st of March. It was Prabhupada's final day in Mayapur. So Jayapataka Maharaj was instructed during the walk to arrange a meeting with Srila Lalit Prasad Thakur, the only remaining brother of Srila Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada wants to meet him on his way into Calcutta tomorrow. Apparently, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has some difference of opinion with Lalit Prasad. Lalit Prasad is a Babaji, a member of a class of reclusive devotees who remain aloof from the general population and simply chant the Maha Mantra. His brother, on the other hand, was a sannyasi, an active preacher who created a large movement and attracted much opposition in the process. Apparently, Lalit Prasad considers himself to be more confidentially situated in his relationship with the previous acharyas and Krishna. So there was some difference of opinion there. And Lalit Prasad was the leader of a group of Babajis there who didn't like what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had done in forming the Gaudiya Mat and going out, you know, actively pushing Krishna consciousness and establishing so many temples. They thought that it was un-Vaishnav because, of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had created huge amounts of controversy in what he was doing. So much so that at one point there was an active plot to kill him. Some money had been paid to the police, local police, to not say anything. But because they knew that he was a great saintly person, the police chief came to see him and he told him that you should be careful. These Babajis, not these Babajis, but others, they're paying some money, 25,000 rupees, which was a huge amount of money in those days, to get rid of you, so you just be warned. And there were occasions when they had gone to meetings when people, gundas, had come. They were throwing stones at one point in one meeting. Sridhar Swami, Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciple, had actually taken the dress of a sannyasi and appeared before the crowd to fool them into thinking that he was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And in the meantime, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was smuggled out the back because there were agitators in the crowd and they were throwing stones and generally causing a disturbance. And then what to speak about when they went to Vrindavan and he started the Vrindavan Brajmandala Parikrama. Many places that they went on the route, the villagers wouldn't accept them. They shut their doors, they shut up all the shops, they wouldn't sell them anything. Again, sometimes they were pelted with stones, etc. So it was very controversial what he was doing. But he was very determined. He knew the proper standard. Most of the opposition was from the smarter Brahmins because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was giving initiation, Brahmin initiation, to people that were not born in Brahmin families. So they felt that that was destroying the Hindu culture. So he became like an enemy to many people. Very controversial, but he also was very strong and powerful. And he would openly criticize various personalities. One time he got in a conflict with Rabindranath Tagore. He was criticizing him just around the time when he'd been given the, you know, the Nobel Prize for Literature. He was like the national hero. Bhaktisiddhanta was criticizing him. So that way he was very fearless. He took that, of course, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was also very fearless, as I mentioned. He openly, in writing, criticized various groups of so-called Vaishnavas. When there was, you know, this disturbance from this Bishikena, this fake incarnation of Lord Vishnu, he had no hesitation in going there and arresting him, etc. So it's kind of like in our line, if you want to preach, you have to take risks. You have to, you know, undergo a certain amount of criticism. Not everybody's going to like it. But if you actually know the standard, then you have to push on and stick with it. So Bhaktisiddhanta was doing that. But his brother Lalit Prasad was not very happy about that. He thought that he was too controversial. The Babajis didn't like, you know, this preaching mission. They thought you just chant Hare Krishna privately, you stay in your place in the dharms, and you don't disturb anybody. So that conflict was going on there. In 1972, actually, because I'm now referring to 76 when I was with Prabhupada, but in 1972, when ISKCON had just was getting off the ground in India, some of the devotees, Shyamasunda, Guru Das, Achyutananda, they'd been to Biyanaga, and they had seen many of the original manuscripts of Bhaktivinoda Thakur were there in that Biyanaga temple, and they were kind of rotting away. They were deteriorating, not being looked after. And when Prabhupada heard that, he had instructed Yadavara to immediately go there and photograph as many of the manuscripts as possible. He said, so that future generations can see the actual handwriting of such great saintly persons. So they had gone there for about a week. Lalit Prasad had given some materials of his own to the devotees, and initially Prabhupada said, all right, send that to the BBT and we'll see about publishing it. But then when they started reading it, it was critical of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, some parts. So then Prabhupada said, all right, now you keep that aside. You don't distribute this. So there was this kind of, you know, agitation was there between his camp and ISKCON and also the Gaudiya Math. They're not very favorable to the Gaudiya Math. So in this way then, that was in 72. Still, by 1976, there was some discussion with, you know, this group that were there. Lalit Prasad Thakur had some management committee of the Biyanaga temple, and so there was some discussion whether we could do something there. So despite this, Prabhupada has been negotiating to get either a lease or ownership of the birth site of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Lalit Prasad, and also our spiritual great-great-grandfather. He wants to renovate the place and maintain a preaching center there. Prabhupada has met with Lalit Prasad previously, who said that he was willing to cooperate with us. He has not been able to develop the birth site, but still some of his men are hesitating. He has a committee to manage his affairs, and now it appears that they want another meeting. So without raking up the controversial points, Prabhupada made a few observations by which we could understand the actual symptoms of confidential service. So that was his claim, we are confidential, Bhaktisiddhanta was not. So he said, what is the use of such men? Why is he keeping these men? They cannot do anything. He gets some pension and he spends that money, but they are not doing anything. So what is the meaning of this so-called committee? Jayapataka Maharaj told Srila Prabhupada that the Thakur has admitted that many times he has told some of his men to leave their family life and take up preaching, but they don't do it. How they'll do it, Prabhupada rejoined. They do not know how to preach, neither they are trained up. That means it is his disqualification. He could not train them to preach. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was training Haridas Thakur, Nityananda, go there, preach there, do that. And my Guru Maharaj was also doing that. But this Lalit Prasad, he has no such power. He cannot do it. He simply talks that he is a very confidential devotee, that's all. But he cannot preach. Otherwise, Prabhupada developed this Mayapur, but he could not do anything. That means that he has no such power. He should have developed that place, Jayapataka Maharaj ventured, meaning Biyanaga. Yes, Prabhupada said. He simply talks of big, big work. In the beginning, Prabhupada had no committee, nothing of the sort. But that he'll not admit, that he has no power to do so. He simply thinks that he is a very confidential son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that was on the 21st. Jayapataka Maharaj made the arrangement, and on the 22nd, the next day, on the way to Calcutta, then we did in fact go to Biyanaga. So we stopped off at the ashram of Srila Lalit Prasad, the brother of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. As the last remaining son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he is very old. His ashram consists of a small temple and a few red brick dwellings, none of which are well maintained. Prabhupada talked for some time with him and some of his management committee. They discussed the plans that he has for development of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's birth site, but nothing conclusive was arrived at in regard to their giving us some land or even a lease on the property. So we all took prasadam before leaving. Prabhupada with Lalit Prasad and we disciples with the local devotees of the ashram up on the open roof. Jayapataka Maharaj, eager as ever to preach and advertise ISKCON's worldwide missionary activities, told a group of our hosts about our preaching in the West. They were all eager to hear, and Maharaj tried to impress upon them the great need for Krishna consciousness in all the countries of the world. He told them of a law that had recently been passed in Sweden, which made it no longer illegal for members of the same family to have sex with each other. He said that they are becoming increasingly degraded, and only Lord Chaitanya's movement can save them. The simple Bengali Vaishnavas were all shocked to hear such things. They were very appreciative of Prabhupada's preaching and his Western disciples. After an hour or so, we departed, but nothing was positively decided. So that was it. That's how things remained. Later on, they became more disinclined after Lalit Prasad Thakur's passing. Then it became almost impossible to deal with these people. And even to this day, they're not at all inclined to the Gaudiya Math members or to ISKCON members. If you go there, they're a bit standoffish. although we have done some work there. Prabhupada set up in 1977 in October the Bhaktivedanta Swami Charity Trust, and that was a special trust. He put some of his godbrothers on the board of that trust, and the idea was that he put aside a certain amount of money, which the interest of which would be spent every year on renovation projects or new projects, especially in the West Bengal area. So the BSCT, as it's called, every year they have a certain amount, not much, but a certain amount of money, and they take applications from temples here and there, and they help them in different ways. So like Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother, the BSCT built some extension on his Nat Mandir. At the beginning of this year, we had gone up to Bharatpur, where the Shripat of Gadadhar Pandit is. And in the early 1990s, the BSCT had gone there, and they built them a Nat Mandir also, just in the front of their temple. So we do that kind of work, and some work has been done by Prabhupada's Charity Trust at Bianaga. They helped them with some renovation work. But despite that, they're still not very favorable and are a little difficult to deal with. There's some other things that's going on there, but I won't say that in public. Just in connection with our library. Because we have now, in Calcutta, we've got the Bhaktivedanta Research Center. I was showing the other day, well, last year I showed it here, but we actually found in that collection that we got from Sundarananda Vidyavinod, who was a leading literary disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, we got his original collection of about 2,500 books. That was the original library, actually, of the Bagh Bazaar Gaudiya Math in Calcutta. And virtually speaking, it's the personal library of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So somehow that came into our hands, and we're looking after it. And we actually have a few samples of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's actual handwriting, some small samples. And even we have an 8-page handwritten calculation of the horoscope of Lalit Prasad Thakur, written by his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we have some interesting stuff there. And we are working on trying to get into Bianaga and at least photograph all of the manuscripts that are there before it's too late. Because even the stuff that we have is now deteriorating very rapidly. And so, you know, it's critical that we do something. Anyway, we'll work on that one as we go along, but there is something going on. And there's a couple of our devotees that privately, they made some contact with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family. He, of course, left his body in the family house there in Calcutta. And that place, then, a couple of devotees are helping to help the family to renovate it and keep it in good order. So we're making some bridges, and we'll see what happens. Okay, so another angle on Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Prabhupada was very fond of quoting various songs of his, so those came up a few times. There was one or two songs that he particularly quoted, but we'll have a look at that now. So on October the 29th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. And he was giving a class on the fifth canto, chapter 5, text 7. So he said, ultimately we have to realize that working for individual self-interest offers no satisfaction. He alluded to a significant event in his own life that had helped him to turn fully towards spiritual pursuit. He said, as soon as you see that it is all useless, sahasa vipaschit, then that is actual enlightenment. As soon as we find, by the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, by the guidance of Krishna personally, as soon as we come to this understanding that we are simply wasting our time, Shrava eva hi kevalam. So, when in the beginning, when I understood one song of Bhaktivinod Thakur, Maya Jali Bade Hoye Acho Miche Kajloye. Whoever's a Bengali here, please excuse my pronunciation. It must sound awful. But Bhaktivinod Thakur says, many times he has said, Maya Boshe Jacho Beshi Kacho Habu Dubu Bhai. Jeev Krishna Das Avishvash Kole Tora Dukonai. O brothers, needlessly under the control of Maya, you suffer and are carried away by her waves, sometimes floating, sometimes sinking in this ocean of illusion. If you have this faith that the soul is the eternal servant of Krishna, then there'll be no more misery. That's the translation. So Prabhupada said that was a turning point in his life when he understood that quote or that song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He said, very instructive. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs, very instructive and simple. So Prabhupada had a lot of appreciation personally. It helped him a lot. So one of the quotes that he would often bring up in reference to Babaji's, or the so-called Babaji's in Vrindavan, Eta Eka Kali Chela, Naki Tilak Gale Mala. We'll explain that, you know, if you're a Bengali. When Prabhupada set up Krishna Balaram Mandir and opened it, one of the strict rules for all the inhabitants of the Krishna Balaram Mandir was that you cannot go outside for hearing from the Babaji's. Prabhupada strictly forbade it. He made sure that, you know, we had our own program, and he wanted that strictly followed. Nowadays, it's become a popular thing, but Prabhupada didn't like it. And the reason why was because these so-called Babaji's, many of them, not saying every Babaji in Vrindavan is bogus, but many of them are. And Prabhupada was very critical of them. As he said, so-called Goswamis, Sadhus, Mahatmas, Babaji's. He said, you take the whole of them together, they have not advanced Lord Chaitanya's movement one inch. He said, they criticize us, but we are spreading all over the world. Again, it was that same thing. You know, the mood is that we are confidential. We are, you know, on the inner circle of Lord Chaitanya's entourage. We chant 64 rounds. These ISKCON people, they're all bogus. You know, or rather, they're preaching, so they're on a lower level. That was the criticism. So Prabhupada naturally advised us not to associate with such persons. And actually, that advice was not just coming from Prabhupada. It was not just coming from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who also was very critical. They had a place, it's still there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a house in Radhakund. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to stay there sometimes, and Prabhupada visited with his spiritual master in 1935 for about 10 or 12 days at that place. So when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had come to Radhakund, the news went out, oh, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has come, he's going to be speaking. So initially, so many of the local Babaji's and Sadhus were coming, but he started speaking on the Upanishads. So as soon as they saw he's speaking on Upanishads, he's not speaking on Radha Krishna Leela, this and that, they stopped coming. They didn't want to hear about the Upanishads because they consider it's lower or external or something like that. So therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, they're not Radhakund Babaji's, they are Narakakund Babaji's. Narakakund means hell. So, you know, there is this, you know, difference between the preachers and many of these so-called Babaji's. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the one who started to criticize them. He's the one who put it in writing. And this one song was often quoted by Srila Prabhupada. So this was March the 25th, 1976. for his morning exercise. This was in New Delhi, actually. Prabhupada was in between the Mayapur leg of the festival and the Vrindavan leg, and we did a few programs in New Delhi. So for his morning exercise, Prabhupada took an easy walk up and down the grass reserve of the front street. He was staying at that time at Lakshman Agarwal's house in Chanakyapuri. So he answered questions from his small band of listeners, Gurudas Swami, Atreya Rishi, Chayavana, Pushtakrishna, Gopal Krishna, Yadabhara, and myself. Yadabhara queried why devotees get sick if sickness is a punishment for those who violate God's laws. Prabhupada's answer was frank. Devotees, to become a devotee is not so cheap a thing. You don't think that because you have got tilak that you have now become a devotee. Why do you think like that? Bhaktivinod Thakur, he has sung, Eta Eka Kalia Chala Naki Tilak Galaimala. Here is another follower of Kali. Why is he? He's got tilak and mala. But Sahaj Bhajan Kachan Mamu Sangalai Parawala Eta Eki Kali Chala. He is worshipping, doing his bhajan, and taking another man's wife. Here is a servant of Kali. Simply he has changed his dress with tilak and mala. So Bhaktivinod Thakur is said. So he looks like a Vaishnava. He's got tilak, kunti mala, he's got beads, he's chanting, but actually is a follower of Kali. If you take tilak and mala and do all nonsense things, then you are not a devotee. You are a Kali Chala. To become a devotee is not so easy a thing. Atreya Rishi added, devotee means perfect. Oh yes, certainly, Prabhupada said. Devotee means that he is above the material laws. That is a devotee. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, he is on the Brahman stage. So that is a devotee. That means sahajya, that because I have got tilak and mala, oh, I have become a devotee. This kind of cheating will not do. So, again, similarly, later in the year, Prabhupada had been on a world tour. He came back in mid-August. And by early September, he returned to Vrindavan. At that time, there was something going on with one of Prabhupada's former servants. He had been associating with some so-called Babajis in Govardhan and become thoroughly poisoned. And he, at this point, disappeared. Nobody had seen him for several weeks. Then, not long after the comment that I'm going to make now, he sent a letter to Srila Prabhupada criticizing Prabhupada personally, criticizing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, condemning the standards in ISKCON, and he was making this comment that if you really want to be a confidential servant of Lord Chaitanya, you have to chant 64 rounds. That was his big thing that he was preaching. And because we don't chant 64 rounds, then we're not confidential. And then, therefore, Prabhupada made that comment, you take all the Babajis and Sadhus and Mahatmas in Vrindavan and put them all together, they've not advanced Lord Chaitanya's movement one inch, whereas we're spreading all over the world. In other words, who is actually confidential? The ones who just sit down and make a show of chanting, or the ones who are actually doing the work and fulfilling Lord Chaitanya's desire and prediction? That's, you know. Anyway, so Prabhupada was very much aware, of course, of what goes on in Vrindavan, in various places. He had lived there himself for a number of years. Of course, you know, he was resident in Radha Damodar. Before that, he had been coming and going between the Bamsi Gopal temple at the back of Kesi Ghat and various other places. So he knew very well what was going on in Vrindavan. And therefore, he was very cautious about us mixing with certain kinds of characters that were there. So September the 7th, Prabhupada had been there about 5 days in Vrindavan, 1976. Prabhupada opened his half-hour lecture with a warning about the dangers of hearing from the Mayavadis. He condemned their idea that the Bhagavatam was written by Bopadev, and he said that even Shankaracharya could not comment on the holy text. He said he wrote comments on the Bhagavad Gita, Shankaracharya, but he could not touch the Srimad Bhagavatam because in the Bhagavatam things are so nicely set up, Kritvanu Kramya, that it is not possible by the Mayavadis to prove that God is impersonal. They cannot do that. Nowadays they are doing, reading Bhagavatam in their own way, but that does not appeal to any sane man. Sometimes I've seen a big Mayavadi is explaining one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, that because you were God, therefore if you were pleased, then God is pleased. So this is their philosophy, that you do not require to please God separately. So if you were pleased by drinking wine, then God is pleased. This is their philosophy. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has condemned this Mayavadi commentary. Prabhupada went on to say, they are very, very envious to Krishna. Krishna is Dvibhuja Mulidhar, Shyama Sunda. And the Mayavadi explains, oh, Krishna has no hand, no legs. This is all imagination. So how much offensive it is, they do not know. But to warn people like us, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is plainly warned, don't go to the Mayavadis. He said that the Mayavadis are to be found even here in Vrindavan, but they may not appear obvious to the untrained eye. So you should be very, very careful, he said. Don't go to hear any Mayavadi. There are many Mayavadis in the dress of Vaishnavas. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained about them that Eta Eka Kali Chala Naki Tilak Galimala, that here is a follower of Kali. Although he has got tilak on his nose and neck beads, but he is a Kali Chala. So you have come to Vrindavan. So you be careful, very careful. Mayavadi Bhashya Srinile. There are many Mayavadis here, many so-called Tilak Mala, but you do not know what is their inside. But the great acharyas, they can find out. They create disturbance only, and therefore we have to follow the Goswamis, the Goswami literature, especially the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which we have translated as the Nectar of Devotion. Every one of you should very carefully read and make progress. Don't be victimized by the Mayavadi so-called Vaishnav. It is very dangerous. And actually the Sahajas, Prabhupada explains, they're also, although they say they accept Krishna as God, and you know the Leelas, Radha Krishna Leela, etc., but they imitate it. And in that way Prabhupada said that they're actually Mayavadi also. Although they appear to accept Krishna as supreme, but in imitating Krishna's Leelas, so-called Parakiya Bhajan Leela, they make a mockery of the whole thing, and they actually again try to utilize Krishna for their own sense gratification, or to justify their sense gratification. That is also Mayavadi. Yeah. It's not until you come to the devotional platform and you actually surrender to Krishna and serve him that you actually get the proper understanding. Otherwise, the Sahajas are also tainted by Mayavad philosophy. So that was on the 7th. 2 days later, September the 9th, Prabhupada was taking his massage. So he's been taking his massage in his bedroom because the sun is still a little too strong for him to be exposed to it for an hour and a half. During today's massage, he talked more about the householders and women and children who were being attracted to come and stay here at Krishna Balaram Mandir. It was a problem because there was actually no facility for the ladies with children, and so they'd put them into the guest house, and the kids were running around because they had nowhere else to go. They were running around the guest house and making a racket all day, and Prabhupada was complaining that now how will any guests become attracted to come and stay with us with all these kids running around and making such a disturbance. So he was trying to solve this problem of what to do with the women and children. So he stressed the purity of living in Vrindavan, that it is actually meant for renunciation and not for increasing our material propensities. He said that actually Vrindavan is not meant for householders. It is for the sannyasis, brahmacharis, and vanaprasthas, he said. It is meant for retirement from material activity. It is not an ordinary place. But they are coming and thinking, oh, Vrindavan is so nice, and simply eating and having sex. Actually, all sex life is a great offense in Vrindavan. It is not a place for increasing the family. Even so, if they do come, they must work. Not that the sannyasis go out and beg and support the householders. This is very wrong. Householder means he must work. He must work harder than the others to earn a livelihood and give at least 50% to the temple also. He also spoke about the false renunciates, the many false renunciates wandering Vrindavan's sacred precincts. He said, they live in the forest, naked, renounced, eating fruits, but debauching number one. Marakata Vairagya, monkey renunciates. There are so many Vairagis, so Marakata, monkeys. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said, Eta Kali Chela, here is a disciple of Kali, Nake Tilak Gale Mala, but he's got Tilak on the forehead and neck beads on the neck. But he is a Kali Chela, a number one disciple of Kali. So you know this song, Kali Chela? He gave a little chuckle as he cautioned us not to broadcast the fate of such persons, lest it got us into trouble. Because previously, Prabhupada had made some comments about the so-called Goswamis in Vrindavan and how they, you know, engage in all nonsense activities, and then in their next lives they take birth as dogs and hogs in Vrindavan. So that was printed in a Back to Godhead, and then somehow or another that was distributed in Vrindavan, and it went into the hands of some of the Goswamis in the big temples there, and they became very angry. And they came to see Prabhupada and demanded that it be withdrawn, but Prabhupada wouldn't back off. But he, as he said there, he said, don't advertise. But he said, at least you should know that this is the position. He said, but it was a fact that those who live in Vrindavan and behave like monkeys will take their next birth as monkeys. Then, next life after that, they will be liberated. In one life, all their sinful activities will be punished. Because as soon as this animal life is obtained, then there is no further record of sinful life. The animals cannot make sinful activities more than what is destined by him. But their sinful activity is also not taken into account. So for this man who is offered this monkey's body, he suffers the inconvenience of monkey life. So his sinful activities are counteracted, and because he came to Vrindavan and lived in Vrindavan by the mercy of Radharani, then in the next life he's liberated. So this is the glory of Vrindavan Dham. Otherwise, what is the explanation of these dogs and hogs and monkeys in Vrindavan? It is due to Dham Aparad, committing offense in the Dham. As Dham Bhajan, if one undergoes devotional service out of Vrindavan, and if one executes devotional service in Vrindavan, that is 100 times better. Similarly, Dham Aparad also. So this Aparad, when the offense is committed outside of Vrindavan, it is not so grievous as committing the offense in Vrindavan. Dham Aparad. So the punishment is there, but the reward is also there. So one life, then it makes it all pardoned. Tattenukampam shushamikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipakam. Therefore, a devotee in a reverse condition of life, he understands, I am being punished, little punished, for my previous mischievous activities. So now I am becoming liberated. So he becomes more enthused to worship the Lord, that you were finishing my sinful reaction of life with slight punishment. Thank you very much. So this is a devotee. Tatte nukampam shushamikshamana. So, a nice observation there, Prabhupada's explaining that because they're in the Dham, they make so many offenses, so in the next life they have to take a horrible birth as a dog or a hog or a turtle or whatever it is. But they stay in the Dham, and in that one lifetime, then all of their sinful activity is finished up. They get purified because they're in the Dham. And then when they finish that birth, then they go back to Godhead. So they get punished for one lifetime. As Prabhupada told us, don't take the risk. We had one devotee. His name was Prahlad Rakshasadas. He was from Ireland. I haven't seen him for many, many years. But I remember he had one dispute with Dhananjaya, who was the temple president in the early days when the temple first opened. And Dhananjaya was getting on his case because he was having problems. He wasn't following properly and he wasn't doing his service properly. And he made a comment that he said, you know, it's just too much. It's too difficult to keep up these strict standards. I think Dhananjaya made some comment that, you know, if you break the principles, then you may become a dog or something in your next life, Prabhupada's warned. So he said, good. He said, I'd like to become a dog in my next life. He said, because that way then I don't have to do anything and then I'll go back to Godhead. So then Dhananjaya told him, yes, but what is the guarantee that you'll take birth as a dog in Vrindavan? What if you take birth as a dog in Delhi? Then what will you do? So he was thinking like that. You know, I'm in Vrindavan. It's too difficult to follow the principles. It doesn't matter because Prabhupada said in your next life, you'll take birth as a monkey or a dog. And then after that one lifetime, then you'll go back to Godhead. So you don't have to try, right? You don't have to control your senses. You just, you know, do all nonsense. Take birth in Vrindavan in some lower species. Again, you can do whatever you like, whatever's allowed you. And then at the end of that, then you go back to Godhead automatically. But actually, if you have that mentality, there's no guarantee that you will take birth in Vrindavan. Yeah, you may be. That's for those devotees who, somehow or another, they do some abominable activities. But, you know, they're not intentionally taking advantage of that. That's like the seventh offense in chanting, to commit sins on the strength of chanting the holy name. That mentality is that offense. That, all right, I can do whatever I like. I'm a devotee. I'm living in Vrindavan. It doesn't matter. I'll go back to Godhead automatically. No. That's for those who are devotees. They're trying to serve Krishna, but they may, due to some weakness, commit some offense. So in their next life, all right, they've done something. Krishna gives them that benediction. Finish up all your activities in one lifetime in some lower form, and then you can come back home, back to Godhead. But that's for those who are inadvertently, not those who are deliberately doing. Okay, so it's 8:45. How long do we go for? We should finish? Or not? Who's in charge here? Nobody. Krishna. So what shall I do? Shall I continue on or shall I stop?